So I think I don't have 45 times 2 to go, maybe 30. Okay? So it and hopefully Johan will still cover my expenses, even if I'm cheating a little bit. So I'll very briefly go through what I have to say, and maybe we will have some discussion after that, quick discussion, whatever, and call it a 2 week, not a day. So first of all, to remind you, the key relation in talking about the noted objects, whatever they may be, is the sixth term relation written over here. There is also a Roman 12 relation, and there is also sometimes, if you mod out by Rademaster 1, sort of the small chords are equal to 0, but my expectation is that this is not any more interesting than the classical case. Okay, so let's ignore it. Okay, so the next thing to do is to, so now I want to do the low algebra, and the next thing to do is to do a, to have a bracketized theorem, sort of to convert the picture in, the arrow picture to a trivalent graph picture. So, you know, you may notice sort of the bolero style, okay? So it's the same music each time, but with slightly different instruments. Anyway, so there is this Polyak-Ochtsuki theorem, which is the bracketized theorem for this case, and it says the follow. It says that that space, so arrow diagrams, essentially on an arbitrary skeleton. So on an arbitrary skeleton, modulo sixth term are equal to a cyclic trivalent diagrams modulo the six relations written here, except it's only two. But what is an acyclic trivalent diagram? So first of all, it's a trivalent diagram much like in the case of W, except over, so again, the same type of graphs, except, okay, for W we wanted the graphs to be connected to the skeleton, we still want them connected to the skeleton. For W I wanted two in, one out vertices, and here I allow also one in, two out. So in fact over here, well over here you have a two in, one out vertex, this one, and over here you have a one in, two out vertex. Okay? But again, no sinks, meaning no three in vertices, and no sources, no three out vertices. Okay? And then what are the relations? So well, there is an STU relation for crossing two incomings, there is an STU relation for crossing two outgoings, there is an STU relation for the commutator of an incoming with an outgoing, but it has two terms on the left instead of just one. Likewise, there is an IHX relation where three are incoming and one is outgoing. There is an IHX relation when one is incoming and three are outgoing, and there is an IHX relation when two are incoming and two are outgoing. But how do you remember all of these relations at the same time? So in fact, all of these relations are the same. Okay? So it's very simple. You take the externals in each case and choose what they are. So either two incoming or one out, two outgoing, or one incoming and one outgoing. And then you draw the inside without marking arrows. And then you complete the inside to have arrows on it in all legal possible ways and some. Okay? So that's just the if you want, it's a thumb rule for how to remember all of these relations. So basically, here you take the blank STU relation, you put two incoming, so two incoming here, and then you consider what to put here, and since you already have two incoming, the last one must be outgoing, so that's the relation. Likewise here, but with the opposite. And here, so you write the STU, you have one incoming, one outgoing, and on the left-hand side, again, you will have, on the Y side, you'll have a one incoming, one outgoing, and then you consider what to put in the middle, and you can, and either Y, either senses make sense, so you put the sum. Okay? And then, likewise for IHX. So if you have three in, one out, then there is no choice about the middle one. It has to go in the direction of the one out. Likewise in the opposite. But if you have two in, one out, so for the I diagram, you have only one choice. But for the other diagrams, like the H diagram, you have two choices for the middle edge, so you take the sum of the two. Likewise for X, so you actually get an IHX with five terms in it. Okay? And then the Polyakov-Zucchi theorem says that this is isomorphic to arrow diagrams modulo 60. Sorry. Yes. Exactly. Again, I will only do half a proof, so I'll give you at least a plausibility argument. Okay? So, let's see. First of all, I need to show that the six-term relation follows from this. Okay? So, why? So, let's write a Y diagram here. Okay? And and what? And sorry, I write a Y diagram here. The skeleton does not need to be connected. It's just easier to write it as if it's connected. And now I can use one STU to the left, and I will get I'll get the commutator of this and that. That's two of the six terms in the STU relation. Now, I wish I could use an STU relation to go here. But I can't, because the STU relation for diagrams like for things where you have two things going the same way, for one in, one out, has to have an extra term here with the opposite orientation. So let me add that extra term. So this is equal to this plus a second copy where the other term is where this line is going the other way. But if I added it, I must subtract it. So minus, where should I put it? Well, I'll put it here, but small. So minus the same thing with the opposite sign. Okay? But now, the sum of these two is the left-hand side of the four-term STU. So this is equal to this, with the commutator, so I don't need to write two circles. Okay? And the other one is equal to, for the other one I use the third STU relation, right? I have one in, two out. So I use the second STU relation. So I get this, with a commutator here, and here you go, these are the six terms. So that's half the proof, half the plausibility argument. Now the second half of the plausibility argument is, suppose I had a diagram with an acyclic diagram. Okay? Suppose I had an acyclic diagram. I want to show you that which is connected to the boundary. I want to show you that modulo these relations, I can reduce it to an arrow diagram. So I want to get rid of at least one internal vertex. Okay? Now, start somewhere on that acyclic diagram and follow the arrows. You're never stuck because every internal vertex has an outgoing arrow. Sorry, you're never stuck unless you reach the skeleton. Okay? You're also never getting into a loop because I chose an acyclic diagram. Acyclic means no oriented loop. Okay? So eventually I'll get to the skeleton. Furthermore, let me choose the path that takes me to the skeleton in the longest route. Let me choose the longest path to the skeleton. Right? I mean, if I have some one in, two out vertices, I may have a choice which way to go. I'll choose the path that will take me the longest to reach the skeleton. Okay? So, when I reach the skeleton, I may see either of two things. I may either see, so when I actually come to the skeleton, the vertex right before might either be a two in, one out, which is easy, I just use STU, okay? Or it might be the unfortunate kind, which is, I reach the skeleton, but I could turn left, but the one before was a one in, two out vertex. But since I chose the longest possible path, the path on the left cannot be longer than the one on the right, so it must reach the skeleton too, perhaps somewhere else. Okay? So that's what this diagram looks like. Now I cannot use, what I would like to do is to use STU in this direction, or in that direction, it doesn't matter, it's symmetric. But I cannot do it because it's the STU that's not allowed. But on the other hand, I can do the same trick as before. So add and subtract a term going the other way, a term with a line here going the other way, and like it worked before, it will work here too. Okay? So use same trick. So I've constructed I've proven that the map from modulo 60 to the acyclic diagrams is well defined. I've constructed a potential inverse. You have to show that the inverse is well defined, and that's where I stop. Okay? Anyway, so now I have the bracket rise. I need the brackets. What's the corresponding algebraic thing? So the next thing that I put on the handout is just a bunch of copy pastes, screen grabs from the Ettinghoff-Kashdan paper, because I also wanted to be clear that I'm talking about the same subject as they are. So the first copy paste is their definition of a Libye algebra. It's not their definition, sorry. The definition of a Libye algebra as it appears in their paper. So what's a Libye algebra? So let A be a Lie algebra, and let delta be a map from A to A tensor A, which satisfies two properties. So property one, the map, the adjoint of map of delta, is itself a Lie bracket on the dual. So delta is a co-Lie bracket. Okay? So delta is a co-bracket, it satisfies the opposite of a Jacobi, whatever. And the second condition is that delta is a one co-cycle. Oh my God, I don't know what it is, but here is the formula. Delta satisfies this formula. Okay? So now what would low algebra be? So just the usual thing. So you have a diagram. I don't know if I can make it interesting. I mean, okay, let's do this one. You have a diagram like this. You mark each arrow by a label. So I, J, K, L, M. You choose a pair of a basis, dual basis for the Lie algebra. So they write A, but I think I still like it to be G. So you write G, that's to be the span of phi I. You let G dual is the span of phi I. You let G be the span of X I, and then you interpret. I guess let's do it on a long skeleton just so that it will be more like a universal enveloping algebra. So you interpret each incoming arrow as being in the Lie algebra, each outgoing arrow as being in the dual. So this will go to xj phi I phi L x m. But then you interpret the internal trivalent vertices as structure constants. But now I have two pairs of structure constants. So I have, I can take the bracket of xi and xj, and the result will be fijk xk. And I can take the bracket of phi I using the coalgebra structure with phi j, and the result will be, I may as well use the same name for the structure constants because the indices are in opposite sides, so fijk phi k. So for the two in, one out, no. Yeah, this is a two-in, one-out, sorry. For the two-in, one-out, I use brackets. For the other one, I use co-brackets. So here I will get F, K, L, and then at the top, M. And for the other one, I will get F, I is the input, and J and K are the output. So I and then J, K. And if I'm lucky and I didn't make any mistake, all indices appear twice, once at the bottom, once at the top. I do Einstein, and that's what I get. Okay, so it's boring. It's the, I don't know why I wasted your time. It's the exact same thing as before. The only thing to verify is that the relations are satisfied. I think the STU relations are obvious. I failed to tell you the universal of, where does this live? Sorry. This lives in the universal enveloping algebra, well, of not of G and not of G dual, but of their sum. Okay? So it lives in the universal enveloping algebra of G dual plus G. But I have to tell you how to put a Lie algebra structure on G dual plus G, and fortunately, Ettinghoff and Kashdan tell us. It's actually Manin, I think. This is the construction of a so-called Manin triple, but I mean, I've photocopied it from the Ettinghoff-Kashdan paper. Okay? So there is some standard structure, and if you look at it, the structure has the bracket of a thing in the dual with a thing in the algebra has two terms, and the two terms correspond to the two terms, one term, well, two terms, and the two terms correspond to the two things that come from the from the STU relation. Okay? So at least the term count is consistent. And maybe the last thing to do, you know what? Originally I intended to tell you that this is the five terms IHX. But I think I'll skip it. Okay? Or leave it as an exercise. Maybe just start. So, oops, stopped working. So maybe just a start. So, let's read the left-hand side. So this is the bracket of two things, and then you compute its cob. Sorry, I'm on the wrong line. This is the bracket of two things, and then you compute its co-bracket. So that's the right, the left-hand side here. The co-bracket of a bracket is equal to a mess, but if you count well, the mess has four terms in it, and these are the four terms in the STU relation, in the IHX relation, the other side of the IHX relation. Things are not going well today. Okay. So maybe as an aside, or not as an aside, but sort of another little quote from the Etting of Kashdan paper is that, oh, where is it? I may have skipped it. Yeah, but there is also an equation somewhere, the so-called classical Young-Baxter equation, and if you look at the indices and at how it is arranged, it's exactly the six-term relation. Okay? Then come the high algebra. So I don't even want to define the terms, but they want to define they want to do to so-called quantize the Lie-by algebra, and in order to quantize the Lie-by algebra, they have to construct a certain element J, and that J is related to or has the property the property above relative to a Drinfeld associator. And an explicit formula for J is given below, also in terms of a Drinfeld associator. Okay? So, I want to say one thing about each formula. First of all, if you look at this formula and compare it with what we did yesterday about W, and remove all the symbolism that is not the same as my symbolism, but it's just symbolism, this formula says that a Drinfeld associator is equal, well, you have to move two of the things to the other side and invert them, but is equal to the product of four J's. So J's is what I would call the value of the vertex. A tetrahedron is the product of four vertices. Once you know how to read their subscripts, it matches. And the second formula is, how do you write J using an associator? So this is a bit funny. You have to, first of all, introduce these one pluses and one minuses. Let me tell them what I called them when I talked about them yesterday. So I called, so again, you have to read the paper and see what the definition of one plus is. One plus is the thing that annihilates, I don't remember, either G or G dual. And one minus is the thing that annihilates either G dual or G. Okay? But anyway, let's compare it to what I did. So the key point in what I did at some point was, you know, I had a tangle, and I wanted to, so I did it very briefly at the end last time, and you called it the double tree construction. Okay? So I had a tangle, and I converted it to a not a trivalent graph, and then I punctured it in various places. So first of all, I turned this into a tree. Second, I combined stuff and punctured. But let's understand, let's compare my puncturing to theirs, and then compare the graphs. Okay? So I had two types of, I did one thing on one side and one thing on the other. The thing I did on one side was to cap. The thing I did on the other side was to puncture. So cap meant having a vertex like this, whose meaning, again in the W world, was that an arrowhead is equal to zero. And you never asked me, you know what, maybe now I'll make the distinction. A cap means an arrowhead is equal to zero. And you never asked me, why didn't I introduce vertices or univalent ends which have the opposite effect, where you impose the relation and a tail is equal to zero. Why didn't I do that? Okay? The reason I didn't, well, I did do it, except I called it something else. You see, the moment you have the relation a tail is equal to zero, it means that a tail anywhere is equal to zero, not just a tail near the top. So if, you know, there might have been a few heads here. Actually, it's not the same here, by the way. So over here, if you had a few tails, but the head was below, you have to commute it to the top and pay a price, and only after the paying the price you get zero. Okay? But over here, there is no price to pay. So if there is a tail here, and you want to commute it to the top so as to kill it, then you commute it against heads, and the commutator of a head and a tail is again a tail. That was the, well, one of the STO relations. So by induction, it's the commutator is also zero, so the price is also zero. So imposing the relation an arrow tail at the end is equal to zero is equivalent to imposing the relation an arrow tail anywhere is equal to zero, and that's equivalent to what I called a red strand. So a strand that can receive only arrow heads. Okay? So if you were wondering why I broke the symmetry, I didn't. Okay, or I didn't break it here, it was broken elsewhere in the fact that tails and head were treated differently. Anyway, so there is a little theorem here, and the little theorem is that A space in the W case of a diagram that's capped on one end and I don't know what to call it, sort of capped the other way, uncapped, punctured on the other end, so the A space of that is isomorphic to just the A of a single strand. Okay? So the isomorphism is if you have an arrow diagram on this skeleton, you just place it at the trunk here and then push everything up using the vertex invariance relation. And somehow the result is that after some actions or after some resorting, the tails sort to the left and the heads sort to the right, and the claim is that this is an isomorphism. So if you had only tails here and only heads here, there would be a way to push it back. Okay? Ettinghoff and Kashdan would call it the isomorphism of the universal enveloping algebra of G tensor G dual with the universal enveloping algebra of G tensor the universal enveloping algebra of G dual. They call this isomorphism phi, and phi inverse is what appears here. Okay? And then, I think I'm only giving you a rough sketch of why this formula is the exact, or why this formula, when you reduce to the W case, where the co-bracket is equal to zero, is exactly the formula I wrote, and also exactly the same formula that Alexeyev, Enriquez, and Torossian wrote. Putting these things here is the parallel of puncturing where I've punctured. The tangle that appears here when written in terms of a crossing and associators is, well, here is the crossing and here are the associators, and then you interpret everything as an ordinary arrow diagram using this map phi inverse. So, sorry, it's truly just a sketch, but I want to emphasize the similarity. Okay? And finally, the last quote from Ettinghoff and Kashdan is, they actually make the claim that there exists a universal quantization functor, and when you, it's very, very hard to decipher the symbolism. It's completely different than the one coming from knot theory. But when you work hard and decipher their symbolism, part three of this amounts to saying that there is a formula for R, for capital R, in terms of lowercase r. So it amounts to saying that you can write R as a combination of, well, actually with vertices perhaps, but remaining acyclic, of arrow diagrams. Okay? So, so what's missing? Okay? I mean, why am I not calling it a done deal? Okay? So, part of it is, so what is it that I still don't understand? Okay, in other words. So, part of it is just my ignorance and limitations. I mean, this is the statement of their theorem. I don't understand the proof. I cannot make sense of the proof in any, I mean, the proof uses constructions like the ones I'm used to, but I cannot make sense of it. I cannot interpret it in the language that I know. Sorry. I don't know. Maybe you can. I mean, it's possible, but it's just that I'm a bad reader. You know, I tend to read for 15 minutes and then I, you know, watch TV. No, I browse the web. I never watch TV. But I mean, maybe that's the problem. Okay? But I could never make sense of the proof. By the way, and again, it's possible that it's my limitation. Even if I did make sense of the proof, and by the way, there is an alternative proof of that in a paper by Enriquez. I think it does make sense, in fact, but it constructs R, which allows you to construct invariants of virtual knots. But I think it does it by some inductive degree by degree procedure, like the procedure to construct an associator degree by degree. But it's losing some of the beauty because their construction, well, while I cannot finish it, but at least starts like a topological thing, or virtual topological thing at least. So, So at least in that sense, I cannot be happy about Enriquez. But there is more, you know. I actually want invariants of further knotted objects, and I don't quite know which knotted object to use. There is more than that. I don't understand where the Roman 12 relation comes in. So you see, the conjecture, some of the 18 conjectures that I mentioned before involve the Roman 12 and seem to be right. So even if this is done, that would actually be the bang. That would be the conjecture that I marked as bang in the previous handout. I still don't have the transfer principle to move to the other boxes, and it must somehow involve Roman 12, and I have no idea how. I don't fully understand why a cyclicity rises. Okay? That's another little point. Now, when you look at invariants, at quantum invariants, the way they're usually constructed from quantum groups, there is a separate treatment for the cap going this way as for the cap going that way. So they are actually somehow sensitive to rotation numbers, which means that you will have an issue with the virtual Rademeister 1. I have no clue how to connect any of that to here. Okay? So, I mean, I think much of it is my limitations. Basically, you know, so if I can juggle three balls, okay, and or even three chalks, but this requires juggling five. Like, you have to keep five ideas in mind at the same time. Quantum groups and all of this nonsense and the topology, it's above my skills, or at least above my skills for now. So, okay, maybe one of you will do better. Okay? Also, I tend to be sort of computational. Some things don't work unless I don't believe things unless I compute them at the same time. I still don't know how to compute anything here. One great thing that happens with W is that it has quotients that are easily computable, more easily computable. I can propose many quotients here of the same nature as in the case of W. So, you know, for W I had this quotient where I said this is equal to a balloon on the left. No, sorry, a balloon on the left minus, maybe it was the opposite sign, I don't remember. Something like that, okay? So you can write similar quotients in the bi-algebra case, in the V case, but I still don't know how to do any computations. So basically, well, I'm just telling you where I'm lost. And I'm also, you know, I should be done in 4 minutes, so. Okay, maybe one point of criticism of, or not criticism, but, well, something about both Ettinghoff and Kashdan and Enriquez. So, I mean, all of these people. So they write papers in which they prove the existence of universal formulas. Okay, so if you look at this, it essentially says there is a universal formula which says that using core diagrams, using arrow diagrams, you can solve some equation. But they never interpret the theorems as having a meaning about these diagrams. They only interpret the theorems as theorems about what you get after you apply low algebra, after you specialize. So sort of, you get universal constructions, but they have a meaning only when you specialize. At least in the case of U and W, the theorems have a meaning before specialization. The meaning is there exists a universal finite type invariant. So the meaning of this theorem is missing to me. Okay? So that one appears to have or close to have the meaning of there exists a universal type invariant of certain virtual knots. These ones, which are proven in much the same way, I don't have a meaning for them yet. They are universal theorems, they should have a meaning in the language that I'm talking about, that I've used, but I don't know it. Okay? Anyway, I'll finish with why bother. So, you know, this is a copied from a handout that I gave in 2011, that I wrote in 2011, so I added one thing because it's there. Okay, why should we care? You know, so this is the, I think it's Hillary's answer to why he climbed Mount Everest. But anyway, but here's a different way of phrasing it. Okay, so basically, if the pattern is there, you know, we should study it. I don't know, I'm not sure, the pattern, there certainly is a pattern. So we should understand it. But there are actually more concrete reasons. So one is I've actually never quite understood quantum groups. So this is an you know, I'm coming out in a, it's not the first time that I come out, but it's some sort of a coming out. Well, maybe you'll ask me later and I'll answer later, but that's why I think, but I think there is a gateway into this, or, you know, it's more like, why do the formulas have to be there? And I think the answer has nothing to do with quantizing G2. Okay, it has nothing to do with choosing a Borel's or choosing... The answer is diagrammatic. The answer is quantum groups exist because there is a diagrammatic solution to some diagrammatic problem, and when you specialize to specifically algebras, you get specific quantum groups. So I want to see it done. I'll skip number two. I'll say that AW is often easier than AU. The fact that things are oriented actually. So, you know, an unoriented tree, you don't know in which direction to collapse it. An oriented tree is much easier to manage. So, and in fact, that's why the Alexander formulas work well in W, but are much harder if you try to use chord diagrams. So maybe I will get better formulas in V for other things other than the Alexander polynomial. In fact, so somehow the key to get computable formulas is to take a quotient. One way to get a quotient of AV or AU or AW is to check what are all the relations that are satisfied, assuming you're specializing to a specifically algebra. Okay? And that will give you computable quotients that will compute the same invariants as the invariants that Lie algebra would compute. But there are many other quotients of AV or AU or AW that do not come from, that have nothing to do with Lie algebras and that leave you with manageable spaces. And AV seems to have more quotients than the other examples. So potentially you will get better or more computable invariants using this. And you know, if I had sufficiently many good computable invariants, I might find a counterexample to ribbon equal slice. So that's of course a long term dream. And what was that? Oh, this I did already. Okay, so I'll stop here.
And no extra hour.
What? I will not do an extra hour. Yeah. I don't mind sitting here and chatting with people, but unless you force me to. If you force me to, I will talk about something completely different.
Yeah, no. I want to thank you all for a fantastic masterclass. It's been clear all the way. I'm sure all the participants agree with me that this was a fantastic...
At the most, 80% of the way. Definitely not all the way, but 80 is probably an overestimate too.
Let's thank Raw for a great masterclass.
Thank you. Okay.